Good. So Mike and I talked about this, and we are the moderators. We are the hosts for this. But we have with us a panel, starting from the end of the table to your right and moving right. We have Bree Brown from San Marco, Texas, who, yeah. She is our national student rep, and we're glad to have her with us. Next to Bree is our national rep, Gary Wunder. And then on my right, to the left, we have Carl Jacobson. And so we are your panel. This is your panel, and Mike and I will host. So we will essentially moderate. And so what we want to know is, what do you think we're about? Why are we here? Why are you here? Why did you come today? If you will call your name, I'll call on you, and Mike will bring you a mic, if you will.
We also call the mics the talking stick, so if you have it, you get to talk.
Right. If you don't have it, you don't get to talk. And so.
Yep, pretty much.
Okay. So, and then when you tell us why you are here, we will also tell you why we are here and why it happened. Why did we do this? So, let's just open it up, and I'll ask for any volunteers to tell us, why are you here? Margo?
Okay.
Margo?
No, we need to pry the microphone away from Margo at some point. But we love her anyway.
Well, we love you too. Okay. Why I'm with the National Federation of the Blind. I've been with the National Federation of the Blind since 1979. My first convention was Miami. And I'm here because there's a lot of stuff that we need to do. We're moving forward as blind people. We're moving forward as a movement. But there's still a lot of places to go. And I like an organization that doesn't look backwards and doesn't have a limitation on me. I want an organization that's not going to let me say I can't. And I want an organization that's going to say to me, you probably aren't willing. And the National Federation of the Blind is like that. And I very much appreciate that. I love my NFB family. And I'm just excited by national and state conventions alike, because there's always a surprise, whether it's a comment from somebody or an event that we're doing, whatever it is. And just that's why I'm here, because I want to move and shake. Thank you.
Great. Yeah, we have, was that Ken? Okay.
Margo. Thank you. I'm sorry, who was next?
Ken, raise your hand, if you will.
Hello, everyone. Nice to meet you. My name is Ken Jagul, actually. You can call Ken. I am from Kazakhstan. I am an international student. I am graduate my degree. So, but I'm here to see activity, what National Federation for the Blind does. It's very, very interesting. I see exhibition and the other activity. So, and who knows, maybe when I back to Kazakhstan, maybe we have kind of international ship. And why I'm also viewing this, it is I want to support my neighbors in Kazakhstan who are blind, because I'm also blind, with the technology, with other services available here in the America. So I want to do that same thing in Kazakhstan. Thank you very much for this all opportunity. God bless you.
Father?
I don't
I say. I'm here because Carl threatened me. You know, Carl said that if I didn't come, I was a dead man. I'm here because I missed the last one, and I discovered how much I missed it. I'm here because I always learn stuff and get to see friends that I don't see sometimes in other places. My agency works for the blind, and so it's always important to hear what the needs and the complaints and the suggestions and the developments are. For instance, I was talking to someone earlier today, and I'm going to mention this in my talk tomorrow. They're here at the convention, and they're blind. And they said, isn't it a shame that we never get to see an agenda? And I said, well, there are agendas, but they don't read Braille. I said, well, somebody sent me an agenda in email. I said, well, that only went to important people because we never got one. And the question was, and I think it's a serious one, if you're blind and you don't read Braille, how do we get information to you about the layout of a very strange and confusing hotel so that you can deal with it? How do we get you an agenda that you can refer to and use? And those are technical questions that I think can be answered, but the feeling of this person was that nobody's doing it. It was a criticism of this convention that they arrived here and they don't know what to do, they have trouble getting around, and I said, oh, that's interesting, okay. Now, I think it's solvable, but those questions get raised, and usually at the NFB, they get addressed, and that's why I come, is because I think that's kind of exciting the way that happens. And I talk too much, so now I'm going to sit down.
Thank you.
And just for your information, that particular person, the issue was just solved. It has to be solved for everybody, but for that person, I took care of it.
That is a really, really important issue. And if you don't have a computer, then what do you do? So it's something that we're thinking about and working on, and I hope by the next convention we will have it solved. We have some ideas, so that's where we're at right now. You might need to have a CD player, that's all. Now, is there anybody on the panel that would like to speak to anything you've heard so far? Okay. Is there And anybody else in the audience that want, do you want to comment on why you're here? I have David and Cheryl at the same time. Let's take David.
I've been coming to NFB convention since 1973. NFB has really changed my life. Hopefully, to some reason, I've inculcated the belief that we have that it's okay to be blind, and I also believe that we have the right to fail. Now, that may sound strange, but it seems to me that if you do the best you can, that's all you need. If you fail and you do the best you can, there's nothing wrong with failure. I'm also here because I believe that I have an obligation as part of my legacy through the NFB to try and make things better and easier for the people who come when I will die. I'm 75. I do not know how much longer I will live. I'm not trying to be morbid. But I wake up each day and I thank God that I'm alive, and I thank God that I belong to this organization. It's really like a family who has helped me through all kinds of crises, including the one when my wife died about 16 months ago of cancer. This is part of my family, and hopefully I'm giving something. I've gotten so much, and hopefully I'm giving something back. Thank you.
Okay, so giving back is part of the thing that you're thinking of, and also developing a family and having a second family, so to speak. Cheryl?
Yes, hi. I don't know how many new people are in the room, but I'm Cheryl Echeverria. I am from Brentwood, Long Island, and I've been part of the NFB since 2006. My first state convention was in 2007, and I am an alumni of the state scholarships, which I'm very proud of. I'm here because I believe in our philosophy and the movement. When I lost my vision in 2001, I was going through other medical issues, but I was looking out there for organizations that had that family feeling that Nelson and I both have. And we came here, we met David, we came to the convention, I met Carl and Mindy, and I believe Anil Lewis at that time was our national rep. And we felt we were in the right place the moment we came here. And I moved through the ranks. I'm vice president of Greater Long Island. I'm a national division president. And, you know, titles mean absolutely nothing. We're all family here, and I believe in what we do, and that's why I'm here.
Anyone else?
Okay. I have to remind everybody that I can't give anybody the microphone unless he's recognized from the head table. Okay. Diane's
mm-hmm.
next?
Diane, yes, please.
And just for information while I walk back here, I can't add to any of this. Everybody's stating it very nicely, very well, and that's why I'm here, too.
My name is Diane Jordan, and I'm here because I am totally blind. And when I first joined the chapter in Buffalo, it was primarily because I had decided that I needed to keep busy because of the circumstance that happened to me maybe 3 years being totally blind. And when I first became a member, I used to just go to the meetings and, you know, sit and listen and say, mm-hmm. And then I became more active. And, you know, I truly believe that I'm here to speak for the people who don't speak for themselves, who are not members, and to say to the organization that even though in all their perfection, they have some imperfection, and that imperfection affects other blind people, and that we have a responsibility, a higher responsibility, to try to minimize those things that we don't do that are insensitive. And as coming to conventions and talking to people, you know, I found a lot of people are very insensitive, and they need to know that they are. That's why I'm here. And I love the organization. The more I come, the more people I meet. And it's a good organization, but they have some shortcomings. I remember I was in this year, when I went to Nationals in Florida, I was talking to the people in the pool, and I had something negative to say about some of the things that I thought that we need to be doing. And there was somebody at the pool, I don't know who it was, who said, "Oh, we can't be talking like that because we don't want people." Look, everybody has imperfections. Every organization has imperfections. And I think it's a problem when you can't admit it. And you need to be even admitted to the general public because they already know. But, you know, I work very hard for my chapter. I work very hard for this organization. And I do all that I can. And, you know, that's why I'm here. Because I just, you know, in being totally blind, you know, I have to find a reason why I am. And the only reason I can find that God wants me to be an example to other people. And that's what I try to do in my day-to-day living.
Mike? Let me tell you a little something about Diane that's going to make her mad. Diane is one of those members of my chapter who'd been an active member for a few years and never really stepped up to anything. Well, 3 years ago, I put her in charge of Meet the Blind Month, and she put together a couple activities for us. Since then, I haven't had to ask her to do it. She just calls me at the end of September and says, "Okay, this month you got 4 information tables and 2 interviews to do. Here's the dates and times and where to be." So she just takes it by the reins, and she supports us, she promotes us, and, you know, she does a fantastic job. That's the kind of members we all need to be.
Okay. Other people? Okay. Esther, I had Jessica first. I didn't hear.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I'll be quick because I know there are other people. I do speak very quickly, Diane. Anyway, so I did kind of things backwards when I came to the NFB. Thanks to some lovely people in Mr. Wonder's affiliate, I did national first. Then I came to state. Oops. But while at national, in addition to meeting other lovely affiliate members from Missouri and other states, I met these people from this chapter called Buffalo. Yeah, I guess I live there or something, and you know, the family feeling is really something that I look for, be it in my guide dog school or in the NFB. I've been to other organizations and I don't have the same feeling. So I appreciated what the Buffalo chapter did for me, and I thankfully, even though I've only been a member since 2011, I've been able to move up in the ranks. As Cheryl had also mentioned, I'm chapter president? No, chapter secretary. Yes, I'm chapter something. I do something for my chapter. No, I do, which I'm better at that than talking. I am president of a division, the guide dog division, which I absolutely love. And that was another thing that NFB allowed me to do, was not only advocate for the guide dog that I choose to use, but advocate for blind people in general. And I had never been able to find another organization that allowed me to mesh my two passions. So thank you all for being so lovely and loving. And I will shut up now and let someone else speak.
Thank you. And Esther?
Where are you?
Hi, I'm Esther Markowitz. I actually am here for the first time. I have a visually impaired daughter who's 12, and I've been planning to come for a few years, but up until now I got myself here, so I'm very proud of myself. See how I can help my daughter, you know, become more independent and be a productive, you know, actually self-advocate for herself. But meanwhile, I'm, her, you know, as a mother, trying to help her to get to that stage. So maybe one day I'll bring her along. Meanwhile, you know, thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to acquiring information and being able to help my child and help my community, you know, understand a blind person. So I keep on telling my daughter, when she gets upset about certain things, I tell her that she has to educate people and she has to be the one to, you know, let people know that a blind person could do a lot of things that people think they cannot do. And you know, like they say, when a blind person could hear, I mean, you know, when people say comments and they think the blind person can't hear, that's very upsetting to the blind person. So I keep on encouraging her that she has to educate everybody, and you know, that's why I'm here. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And that's excellent. And Esther, we want you to feel free to talk to any of us at any time and ask us all the questions you'd like. I'd like Bree to respond here. Okay, I'm going to take Bree first, and then we'll take you, Leona.
Okay, it's working. Okay, Okay, so I... Actually, this is my first New York convention. I'm very excited to be here. However, I can promise you without a doubt, this is not my first convention. So, but I am here because when I was in high school, I had some worries and some fears that, of course, my sighted counterparts did not have. And I had always viewed my blindness as just not really much of anything. I always did everything I wanted to do. I always went everywhere I wanted to go. But I was curious about the future. And that worry was very, very short-lived. And I found the Federation in 2009. And because of the Federation, I have been shown that I can do what I want and live the life that I want. But also, I have been given the skills and confidence and experience to do that by finding the amazing mentors and friends that I have here in our Federation. And also, I have been able to get a lot of experiences that I probably would have never had otherwise, and I'm more than thankful for that and very excited to be a part and to continue changing what it means to be blind.
Thank you. That's great. And Leona?
Thank you. Renee, I'm glad to hear part of your story there. And one of my questions was going to be, are you the Brene Brown, the researcher and author from Texas? But I guess you are not. So I'm pleased to know some of your background and hope that all of this, all of these sessions will be helpful, as I'm looking forward to that also. This is my first convention. I'm from Buffalo, New York, and I have heard and have been introduced to chapter members from Buffalo whom I have not met. I have not been to a local chapter meeting. I signed up for the national organization and got this flyer in the mail. I thought, oh, I'm interested in this. This is what I need. So I'm looking forward to meeting and enjoying the company, and I'm hearing it's such a great group in Buffalo, so I'm looking forward to that. So thank you. I didn't hear all of that, but anyways, and
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Leona.
So I'm looking forward to that participation in the group there, and look forward to the rest of the convention. And I applaud the planners for this meeting. It's been very helpful to me. Thank you.
We're really, really glad to hear that, especially when some of you who are here for the first time, are feeling that this is a worthwhile experience. I'd like Gary to speak to some of the things that we've heard so far, and then I'm gonna change this topic just slightly, but Gary.
I did. So the things that I've heard so far, I wrote notes about what everybody said, and a lot of them parallel why I'm here. I came to the National Federation of the Blind for reasons that had nothing to do with helping blind people, and I'll tell you more about that in a banquet speech tomorrow evening. But I soon found that there was a lot of merit in helping blind people. And I figured out that I had been helped a great deal, even though I didn't know it at the time. And once I figured that out, I felt this obligation to pay back. And then once that I thought I had done enough to pay back, I looked at all of the people who were coming after me and the challenges, and now I feel an obligation to pay it forward. Either way, it gets back to paying, I think. But it's more than all of that. It is having a family that is as important to me as my biological family, people that I really care about, and wanting to see that people have it at least as good as I've had it. You know, the things in my life that have gotten messed up, mostly I've messed up, and there have been challenges about being blind that I've had to take on, but I think that they have been mostly building challenges. I don't think they've hurt me any. Anyway, I won't tell you all of that because you have to listen to the banquet speech tomorrow evening. But It's a pleasure to be here. I think we are one of the most progressive forces that that you can find in work with the blind, and I'm just delighted to be a part of a cause that's larger than myself, and that's really saying something after the big box lunch I just ate.
Right. Now, I'm going to change it up just a little bit, and I'm going to let Carl be our first speaker here. And the question I have for you all is, why did they get started? What happened? Why was there a need for this National Federation of the Blind? When they got started, there were 17 people, man. Yeah, they probably had this meeting and they got all hepped up and were real excited about it, and then they went out drinking and then they came back and they talked some more, and somehow this national organization of 50,000 people exists today. Why? Why did it get started? What was the point? And I'm going to start with Carl on this and then we'll take it from there.
Why did I get started?
Not you.
You said Carl. Didn't you?
I did, but what I wanted you to comment on is, what must the situation have been like that caused the 17 people to say, we need a national organization, for Pete's sake. We're in trouble. I mean, they were going along, I guess, and living their lives, but why? Mm-hmm. Why would they do this? What was the need?
Actually, some of them were rather well off. I mean, Dr. Tenbrook was teaching. He was teaching in California. In our own state here, many of our early leaders, Will Webb, Laura Herman, they all had jobs. The war was coming, but they had jobs. They weren't worried about the poverty rate. However, there was a poverty rate for blind people, and it was below that which was a poverty rate for sighted people. And they couldn't stand to, some of the founders of our organization just wanted to stop us from dying slowly of starvation. That was about as simple as it got. However, when they looked around, they saw other reasons to unite, reasons that kept otherwise qualified people out of the teaching profession. Dr. Tenbrook was a teacher. He knew what being a teacher meant, but others were being told, you can't teach, you're blind. Well, he's blind too, and he's teaching rather successfully, and he wanted to see that that got addressed. There are many other reasons where people felt that unity was much more important than individuality. In unity, there is strength, and that's what we have here. We have unity here. People say we follow like sheep. I've heard that over the years. Oh, you just follow like sheep. That's not unity. That's following like sheep. No, that's a thought-out process that decides that the collective good of the organization will be formed by the collective decision of the organization, and therefore becomes a decision that we can all follow and rally behind, not just some slogan or somebody telling us, go believe in that. We don't have to be told to go believe in something. We're here because we do believe in something. No, nobody conned us into coming here. What a funny little mic. Anyway, there's a bunch of reasons that we've come here. And the situations back in the early 40s and the mid-50s are not much unlike the situation today. The only difference is we have a lot more technology. We can say we have a lot more things to do with our unemployment than they had. You know, they got to sit at home and read Braille books from the library. Or we could read them, you know, e-books from the library. Or we could find other things to do with our non-productive time. It hasn't changed that much for us, because there's still non-productivity that has gotten in the way of our people getting jobs. So we need to address that, and we will address that. But I think the big thing we need to address is what we're always going to address, which are the attitudes of society. I don't know if you've experienced any of it around the hotel today. I have not. But maybe you know who's who and what you can say stuff to and not. We talked to the hotel yesterday about what we are and why we are. And one of the things we said was that we're in the business of trying to change names and change, titles and attitudes and opinions about people. And I think slowly over the years that has changed. People don't regard us as the helpless creatures they might have 40, 50, 60 years ago. And that's for the good, because when people can start to change those attitudes, then they might change them in the hiring place as well. But as long as they have those attitudes in the hiring place, and as long as we subscribe to them, whether we know it or not, we do subscribe to them. The longer we subscribe to them, the longer they're going to take to break down. They're going to take at least twice as long to break down for every year we continue them going. I won't even be able to come up behind Mindy and go, boo. Can't scare her no more. She's not scarable. She knows who she is. So, knowing who we are, we will go forward. Knowing who we are, we will win the victory. Knowing who we are, we will live the lives we want. There are plenty of other reasons why we came and stayed, plenty of other reasons why we were formed, but I think there are plenty of other people here who can articulate it in their own way. So let me pass it on to back to Madam First Vice.
Thank you. And thank you very much. And I'm going to pass it on to Gary again, because this is a topic that I think the panel would like to speak to, and then I would like you guys to talk about it a little bit. I'm going to change it up as we finish with the panel. So go ahead, if you will, and speak to this point, Gary.
Well, I wasn't around, but thank goodness I'm sitting next to Bree, and she whispered to me what it was like then. So she tells me that one of the reasons that people got together in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, was that they wanted training. And we didn't have much in the way of training. Training had sort of started in California. And as soon as they started training in California, they found that anybody who qualified for training got kicked off of any aid for the blind that there was. So you couldn't have subsistence level income and training. And apparently this was coming from the federal government. So instead of being a bunch of diverse, unconnected state organizations, there was a need for a national organization to address the national government. Now, a lot of states did not have aid programs for the blind. So what did that mean? It means if you came along and you were a blind person, who took care of you? There weren't jobs out there mostly. There wasn't education out there mostly. So the people who took care of you were your family members, and they were the ones probably who drew the short straw after your parents passed on. And I think a lot of blind people got together and said, we have more capability than this. We don't want to be the burden. We want to be the assets that we can be. And they looked to people like Dr. Tenbrook and others, and they said, he may be especially blessed with a lot of brains and that sort of thing, but he's a blind guy and I'm a blind guy, and maybe I can't be the professor he is, but maybe I can be somebody who is able to pull their weight in society and make something of themselves, and maybe I can be proud enough to have a job. And I think that's part of the reason that we came together. And then once we defined employment as one of our goals after subsistence level income, we had to fight all the barriers that keep us from employment.
Give her that mic anyway.
Okay.
Bree, I want to ask you a question. I realize that you told Gary everything you knew about this. But what I am wondering is, you have benefited, I think, from some of the things that have happened, you know, before you actually even came around. I want to know from you, I wanted to ask you this question, but I know I'm going to, if I do that, I'm going to mess up part of your talks tomorrow. So, But let me ask it this way. when you are in school today, Bree is in her junior year at this point, junior/senior, I think. When you are in class today, do you still find that there are some professors who have a hard time dealing with blindness?
Oh, yes. Yeah, actually I do. However, and as unfortunately, a lot of them have given me the time to educate them about blindness. And I do that through the communication that I have with them to make sure that I can succeed in the class and make sure that I get what I need. But in turn, I also get to talk to them about blindness and how blind people can and will do anything that we want to do. But also, sometimes you run into these professors and they're just really not sure. But they're not going to ask you. And so sometimes it's often up to us as blind people to take that leap of faith and step out and educate, whether it be professors or other employees or just the public in general, about blindness. And I think that is something that has served me well along the way. And because of that, and because of being able to reach out to my teachers, part of my degree is special education. And so, of course, a lot of the students who take SPED classes, there's chapters about blindness, there's chapters about low vision, all that kind of stuff. And so, because I have gotten close to some of them, I actually get the opportunity to go and talk to their classes about blindness and how we really can be successful students, successful employees. And it's just because of that, I get to, it's such an honor to touch all those lives in one presentation. And also, can I say one?
Yeah.
I also want to say, too, that now, to Gary's disbelief, my great-grandma was 7 years old when the Federation was born. and she's still living today. God bless her. But she, but I, you know, it is 17 people 75 years ago to where we are now, 50,000. It is an incredible thing to think about. And I oftentimes think of the Margaret Mead quote that it takes a small group of thoughtful citizens to make a change, and it really does. And it's because there's that people, those people who believed in blind people and who wanted us to have the equality and the opportunity that we deserve to have. And I'm definitely more than thankful for those 17 people who got it all started.
Great. And I'm going to change it up just a little bit here. I know that one of the things that we all are taking from the Federation is the experience of the people who came before us. And I know that what that enables us to do is to be able to live the lives we want. It's going to very quickly become a cliche, but the truth of the matter is that the people who came before did not live the lives they wanted. They were shut-ins. I got on a bus one time myself, and this lady said to me, "What are you doing out?" I'm like, "What? Hello, what?" And she said, "You shouldn't be out by yourself." And I was floored. I was taken aback, but of course I understood why that came to be. And I understand that we here are in the process of changing that. I want to know, however, and this is kind of a strange question, I want to know, what is it that, what are some of the things that you feel that you can learn from other blind people? I think one of the great things that we have among ourselves is the opportunity to share experiences and also to share those things that we don't know, we never knew. There are certain things that we do, and I'm going to give an example here. And one of them is eating. And we don't know how other people around us eat. And I know that that's one of the things that I find. I was surprised to realize that there are people who eat their pizza with a knife and fork. To me, that would be a pain in the neck, but I certainly was glad to find out that, hello, there are people who do that. And I was going to ask you, just to change up the topic a little bit, what are some of the things that you don't know or that you had to learn from other blind people? Okay, I got Margo and Cheryl. Okay. All right. So I thank God for all of you. A lot of people do things that I'm not doing, or maybe they've got a better way, and that's so exciting. Recently, I was talking. I'm going to give her a swelled head. Julie Phillipson and I were talking about clothes, and we were talking about colors, and I, you know, when you look on in a clothing catalog like online, they have all these interesting colors like midnight blue. I can't think, but, you know, crazy stuff. And so we were talking about colors and narrowing down them down to mixtures or basic primary colors or dark or light and things like that. And then we got involved in clothes, and I was saying that I generally buy sets because I'm just afraid of not matching something. And I'd like to get away from that a little bit. Although I still look for sets, I'd like to get away from it a little bit. And so Julie just came up with this really bright idea that I've been using, that certain colors of pants or whatever would go with, I could buy about any top that I wanted to. And my point is that she has a little bit of vision, but yet she also is blind and understands that part. And so, and I'm just saying that I am so grateful and humbly grateful to be with blind people who I can ask questions and aren't going to think I'm weird. I mean, they know I'm weird anyway, but and just to find out or just to observe people and listen to what they're doing, and then I get to say, really? I've always wanted to do it. How do you do that? And again, like I said before, we're not an organization of I can't. We just aren't. And so thank you, blind brothers and sisters, and thank you to the sighted people who believe in us too. Thank you so much. And I have Cheryl. Okay, I know. I just wanted to make sure I had it in order. I have Cheryl, and then I have Jim after that. So, Cheryl?
Well, my thing is two parts. One part is going back to why I joined, and the philosophy of the NFB is that when I first joined, I had a lot more sight than I have now, and I thought you had to be a totally blind person to be part of this organization. And I'm passing that along to other people to learn about the NFB. Is you don't have to be born blind, you don't have to be, you know, totally blind to be part of this organization. So that's one thing. The other thing is, as many of you know, if you don't know, I own my own travel agency. When I'm talking to people that are blind that travel, I learn about their travel skills. You know, I go through a question and answer period. Are you traveling by yourself? And they go, no, I'm not. My husband's blind too. I say, great, I want to learn from you so I can pass it along to other blind people that may want other tips and stuff. So I'm always listening to you guys, how you travel. There's, you know, some people travel with guide dogs, some people don't even travel with anything, and I'm like, that's a little scary to me. But they do it, and that's how I learn from other blind people, is by talking to them about how they travel day to day.
Oh, that's great. Get this on. That's great. That's great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's good. Give her a hand. And Jim?
Who?
Jim Grasso? You want to raise your
hand?
There
he is.
Yeah.
He was hiding on me.
When I first started, you know, being with blind people, I actually went out to a place called Jan's on 82nd Street and 37th Avenue. And this blind woman, well, she's not alive no more. She, you know, she lived at Jackson Heights there. And she would ask her questions, how come blind people are directors at different camps and different other areas. So I said to Valerie, I said, this is the way it is. As the blind people can come directors at camps. And she says, I don't think a blind people should be a director at camp. As a Valerie, you're blind yourself, and I'm surprised you're saying that. And, you know, that could be you that wanted to be a director, and then how would you like if I said you didn't want to be a director, that you couldn't do it? She didn't know what to say. That's all I have to say on this.
Okay, it's a good point. Yeah. Okay, Sue?
I disagree with, I know people blind, when I went to school, from the school where I lived, there were some people blind who weren't, and I wasn't against them at all. I know they, you know, try to help them. One part is, if they want to learn, like anybody else, you're going to learn and do it. That's like when you're growing up, like Jim, you know, he wanted to be on his own. That I agree with that, and traveling. That's why some people who are not blind should understand that. I do. I'm partially, I'm learning a little more disability, and I love it. But I think some people shouldn't say anything, should keep quiet. I mean, I love this organization, and I think people should just keep to themselves.
Wouldn't that be neat if they wouldn't say the kind of incredible things we hear, huh? Yeah. What are you doing out by yourself? So, yeah, I mean, that's right. Okay. Mike?
You know, to kind of build on what a couple of you said, got me thinking. And a lot of people's perceptions about blindness have to do with not just attitudes, but also how we come across, you know, Margot mentioned how we dress, and that reminded me that in Buffalo we're going to try to get something together, a ladies' day at some store, Macy's or something, where we get a bunch of salespeople and a bunch of the ladies from NFP together and do some, not necessarily shopping, but what not to wear type scenario. So Angie's working on that for us. But also we got to remember image things like habits and stuff like, you know, if you think about it, if you put your cane on the table, that's been on the floor just like your feet have. You won't put your feet on the table. Don't put the cane on the table. It's a dumb little thing. I've seen, Mindy mentioned pizza before. I saw somebody take a piece and just basically jam the whole thing in their mouth.
No.
That's not acceptable out in public. What you do at home is your problem.
But,
image and perception and your habits and the things like that, that may not be acceptable cited norms, for lack of a better phrase. What am I trying to say, Mindy? Help. I'm talking myself into a hole.
Well, actually, I mean, it was a point that I was thinking of all the time. I was trying to figure out how to pull it across. But, I mean, I'll give you another example. Pancakes are not the easiest thing to eat in public. And the reason they're not is because they're boring unless you put syrup on them, or at least butter and syrup. And then all of a sudden they become messy. And so, like, they're really, really a pain in the neck to eat. So how did I figure out how to eat pancakes in public? I asked my blind friends, okay, how do you do it? And eventually I found people who were very, very helpful with it. And I learned that one of the neat things that you can do is cut around the fork. So you take a knife and cut all around the fork, you're going to get a pretty small piece, but generally they're three layers thick, so it's going to be okay, and it's not going to get all messy and yucky, and you're probably going to not walk out wearing it. So You know, so what was the point that I wanted to get people to talk about, which you did actually, is so what good is all of this? What good is all of this? Well, here's something. When Carl and I first got together, he was helping me with mobility and traveling with a cane. I was, at the time, I was transitioning between a guide dog and a cane. And Carl was a really big help to me in learning how to travel and learning how to, what to listen for. And he made me a much better traveler, right? But here's the thing. It wasn't only Carl that was doing that. There were trained mobility instructors, people who were blind themselves, and they were teaching other blind people how to travel. And there's been a big backlash against that, and a lot of sighted teachers have said, this is wrong. You know, a blind person can never teach mobility because what if a car comes, or what if this or that happens? And essentially, none of that has really happened, and people, blind people, are teaching very successfully, teaching mobility. So what have we done? We've opened up another avenue of employment. So, no, we opened it to blind people. Mm-hmm. And that's just by, originally, the exchange of ideas. So, I think that's maybe where you were going with it. Diane?
I'm not impatient. I have to laugh about this because for the majority of my life, I was sighted. I had very low vision, but I was sighted. I worked. I raised a family. I did all those kind of things. So a lot of times when you talk about what sighted people say, I really sympathize with the sighted person. I can't understand why you're so appalled about it. I mean, I'm just so appalled that they would say that. Because when they say things like, you know, why are you on this bus alone, they mean they just, in their mind, they can't imagine how they could do it. It's really a tribute to you. But the way it comes out, it doesn't sound that way. Well, they're not ignorant. They're just not aware. They're not ignorant they haven't been exposed. If you haven't been exposed to something, just because you haven't been exposed to something and you say something about it and you don't know what to say, that doesn't make you ignorant to me. That makes that you just have not been exposed to it. I worked for 30 years with social services, and I'm telling you, I saw one blind person that came into the office on an ongoing basis. She had a stick. She was by herself. And let me tell you, I felt really bad for her. Now, I know that's, but I did. Because she had the stick. You could say, well, she didn't have mobility training. But she probably didn't have the money. She probably didn't know that the mobility training was there. So she was just banging around with the stick. And people would go to her and help her. And I really felt bad for her. So you got to understand that sighted people just don't know. They just don't understand. Because I didn't. And I was almost blind, but I had sight. But, you know, I looked at things from a sighted perspective. And sometimes they're just limitations. When you talked about eating pancakes and being messy. Oh, yeah. Oh, I can't stop talking. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can take the fork, put it down, and cut around it. But if you are totally blind, and I do it all the time, you miss your mouth. So what happens then? You know, are you a bad person because you can't find your mouth? And then you're all messy, and people say, oh, that's a shame. She doesn't. Shut up. That she doesn't learn how to do it. Because a lot of times in eating, I have a difficult time. And I don't think anybody can say anything to me that helps with some of the things, because I just miss my mouth. I can't see it. I can't see a shadow. So, you know. Now, I guess I could learn to take my finger put it on my lip, and then I could guide it better. But some things are just difficult. And even as we sit here, I think some it just sounds like you don't understand how difficult it is. And that's the way I feel, is being totally blind. I think that a lot of times you don't understand how difficult it is. It's not that it's not doable, but it's damn difficult.
Gary.
You know. So, I mean, that's just what I had to say. That's
all right.
That's my experience with life. You just missed your mouth.
Very good. Very good. Okay, and Gary?
I really wish Gary Diane next. Would tell it like it is.
I'm sorry.
Well,
who's up?
We got Gary here. We've got our national rep here.
I have to admit that I'm a little confused. I like Diane's directness and her honesty, but I don't understand how your eyes help you see your mouth. No. Well, touche. Okay, so there are times when I'm using a fork and I may come up with less than what I want, but my mic is not loud for some reason. Somehow, I never miss my mouth. Now, if you have a bite that is larger than you anticipated, the mouth may not be wide enough, but I can't figure that out. Okay, I get that. But you see, what I thought you were talking about maybe was like when you feed a baby, it is an issue then to try to make sure that you can find the mouth, because when the baby feels you touch the face, what does it do? It moves where the mouth was. So then you learn, of course, if you touch the face in the right way, the baby will deliver its mouth right where you want it. But it takes you a while to learn that kind of thing. One of the things I like, when I was a kid growing up, they told me that I should always use an electric razor. Well, not till I got old enough to grow a beard. But when I got old enough to do that, they said, never try to use a blade. And yet I saw that my mother kept a blade around for her legs. I knew I wasn't supposed to shave my legs. But I also saw, when I went in to listen to my father in the mornings and talk to him, he was always shaving using a blade. And so I thought, what a shame that I'm blind and that I really can't shave like they do. I like the electric razor all right, but it doesn't get as close as a blade. So I came to college, and I went to an NFB meeting, and we were talking about the bummers of blindness. And I said, well, one of the things I wish is that I could shave with a blade like my dad. And they said, well, we don't know your dad, but why don't you shave with a blade? And so a guy taught me to shave with a blade. And another NFB member taught me to tie a tie, because I thought that being blind necessarily meant you had to use one of those clip-on ties. And he said, this is ridiculous. Here's how you tie a tie. So there are lots of things we can teach one another, but we have to be honest enough, like Diane, to say, these are things that I don't know. Because if we pretend we don't know them, then we're just defensive, and we get older and older without being honest and saying, what can we really do? Now that I'm ready to stop talking, they've turned me up. Thank you.
Gary, one of these days you'll be able to shave with a blade.
All right. Bree? I have Carl next, okay? Carl asked for the floor, and so he's next. Carl?
Yeah, there was just a quick thought. A little while ago, Mike said, help me, Mindy. I can't quite get the thought right here. And probably some of the reasons we can't get the thoughts right sometimes is because this is more than just a statement of fact or a statement of principle or whatever. It's a feeling that we've got. Your gut feeling that who you are is informed by who we are. So to try to summarize this in a couple of words gets really difficult. And it's a long time to find those couple of words. And now that we've started looking for them, we'll eventually find them. But I wouldn't be too upset with myself if I couldn't find the exact words this afternoon to answer the questions that are being posed out there. Why did I come to this organization? It felt right. That's why I'm here. It feels right. It's my family. And you know, we've heard that phrase used a lot of times, and we start to think because it's used a lot of times, it becomes trite. And maybe it does for some folks, but this organization has proved to be a family to many of us over the years. It's always there. As individual people or as a corporate body, we're there when people are having a tough time. And we care about people having a tough time. So it's more than just a statement of principles. It's a feeling. It's a feeling that makes me able to say, I love you guys.
Thank you. Okay, I'm sorry, did I hear Chancey? Okay. And then Father, okay. Chancey? Oh, Margot, okay. Well, you're after Chancey and then Father. It looks like you're getting displaced, Father.
I think we should just keep the mic over here in this quadrant of the room for a while. I think, and this is something that as a person that works with the public blind, if you will, on a daily basis, something that I've personally struggled with quite a bit. I think we spend so much time convincing our families and sighted friends and the world at large that blindness is nothing but an inconvenience at most. And we become very accustomed to putting up a good front, and it's authentic. Things really do become easy when we know how to do them. But I think when we gather together and we come across someone who finds a particular thing difficult, it's hard because of the daily kind of mental gymnastics that we've done to say that everything is easy, and it becomes true. It's hard to put ourselves in that other person's shoes and be empathetic and say, oh, okay, I do understand that this is difficult for you, and let's talk about it step by step. And let's not actually talk about it as a moral or a philosophical issue. Let's instead talk about how to get the thing done. And sometimes we should be we talk about rhetoric, and we should just be talking about a series of simple steps in building the skill. And I think that's one place where we can all come together, and instead of saying, this is super hard, no, it's not, just talk together about how to do the darn thing. And just for the record, let me just conclude by embarrassing myself. I had an electric razor, and then I got married about 4 years ago, and my electric razor died. And my husband said, here, use mine. And I said, I don't think I can. So it's never too late to learn that skill. Learned it from my sighted husband. How weird is that?
Okay, there we go. I've got Margot.
Margot.
But I wanted to say that I actually learned that same skill from my blind husband.
This is Margot Downey, and I just wanted to mention about the sighted people not knowing or not being exposed. I was grateful to have parents who had never really been around blind people, who my father was educated, my mother was from business school, so it wasn't because they had postdoctorate degrees or anything, because I've heard that excuse that, oh, they must have been very educated. And it was simply because they had the instinct or something that told them. In fact, my mother said to me one time, she said, you know what? She said, I would have protected you more had you been sighted. And she, somehow they knew that I should not be protected. And that my blindness should not be used as an excuse for me. There were times that I was called on the carpet for having a sighted child doing something I should be doing. And they would see that, and they'd say, well, how come you did that? But they'd sit down and talk to me, now, why did you do that? Can you think through why you did that? What caused you to want to do that? And so, without being in the Federation, I would say that my parents, in so many ways, had the Federation philosophy pat. When I was learning to walk, they didn't let anybody protect me more than they would let I mean, they didn't want a, you know, little baby falling downstairs or anything, but they protected, if I bumped my head, well, that was a way for me to learn about the world and how to be a little bit more careful. So what I'm saying is that there are fortunate people who instinctively somehow know in some way that we can do anything we want to do. So that's why I can't totally buy the thing that sighted people aren't exposed and sighted people aren't around blind people. These sighted people must be more educated than these other ones. So I just wanted to share that. And I know that's kind of a controversial way to look at it, but that's me. Thank you.
Good. Very good. And Father?
Okay.
Yeah, well, that way the recorder hears you too.
All right. It seems like there are two conversations going on, and I fortunately have a foot in both camps. Those of you who grew up blind or who lost your sight gradually had a great advantage. I became blind in one day when I went to the Louisiana Center and put on sleep shades. It was like instant blind. Oh, dear God. And most of what I have learned then and over the years was taught to me by blind people. At the Louisiana Center, I didn't know which of my teachers were blind and which were not. And many of the sighted teachers often would teach with their sleep shades on anyway, so it didn't make any difference. The first time I had a real O&M lesson was I'd had one class that morning, and one guy who was about to graduate from the course said, "Come on, let me buy you a cup of coffee and we'll talk." He was older, and I think he was glad to have someone around who was closer to his age. And so we went for coffee, and then we walked home back to the apartments. Well, I wasn't supposed to walk home. I didn't know that. Nobody told me that. But because I was new, I wasn't supposed to go out yet. Well, so he walked me home, and he went in front of me, and he gave me an O&M lesson as I went and taught me about the street and how to get home. And it was great, because nobody teaches being blind better than a blind person unless there's somebody who knows how to teach about being blind. The thing you have to realize that you may not understand completely is that sighted people find you pretty scary. I mean, they really do. I go out and I do a lot of talks to Rotary clubs and to, you know, different organizations, and I talk about the Xavier Society for the Blind, of course, and I talk about my time at Louisiana, and I talk about my experiences. I still go out for walks in New York with my sleep shades and my long white cane to keep my skills up. And the thing is that I can exchange jokes with you guys, because it's happened to me too. You know, you're walking down the street, you got the big black sleep shades on, you got the long white stick in front of you, somebody bumps into you, and over your shoulder you hear, "What's the matter, you blind?" Well, what was the first clue, guy? I mean, you know. We've all had people walk us across streets we didn't want to go across, right? I mean, you know. When I explain to them about the training, I can always guarantee 10 or 15 minutes of questions afterwards. And some of the things are so obvious, and you can look at their faces and go, "Oh, yeah." Like point one, if you're talking to a blind person, the first thing to remember, they're not deaf. You know, "Hi, can I help you?" We've all been there. And they don't know how to do it. And one of the things I conclude the talk with is, here are some things to remember. And they're all very grateful. And you hear stories about, "Oh, my grandfather was blind." And you wonder, did you lock him in a closet? You know, I think it's education going all ways. I think that being open to education. But I think one of the great things that I've learned over the years is to not be afraid to ask for help. The NFB is great, and I've learned that. It's become part of my second nature. We're going to try it. We're going to go out and do it. But there comes a time when you are standing in the middle of Grand Central Station, and you have totally lost your compass. You don't have no idea which way is north. And you've just got to go, "Can somebody help me?" You know, and somebody will. People are very good about that. And 90% of the people who will stop to help you will not give you directions. They will walk you to where you want to go. You know, now, maybe New York is just a very friendly city and the rest of the world is terrible. But in New York, most people will go out of their way to help you. I'm on the verge of talking too much, aren't I? Yeah, thank you. Okay. But as a sighted person who spends time every week with sleep shades on, we need to educate the sighted public that it doesn't hurt. Sighted people are scared to death about being blind. I mean, they really are. And I think when they see a blind person who's obviously blind, that makes them nervous. It's like, oh, that could be me. And one of the questions I regularly get is, would you sooner be deaf or blind? And I go, without hesitation, oh, I'd sooner be blind. Absolutely. To live the rest of my life without music, oh, I do not want to think about that. And I have learned that I could live, I mean, if I wake up tomorrow morning and I absolutely cannot see, I'll need help getting back to New York, and within a week I will be in Louisiana. And I will finish the course that I started, because that is going to give me the independence that I need to finish the rest of my life. You know, there's no question about it. I know what, I've ridden in a car driven by a blind guy. You know, what else can you do? How else can you surprise me? Please. You know, I have played golf with blind golfers, and by the way, he won. He not only won, he embarrassed me by how much he won. You know. So being blind is scary only if you're not blind.
Bree?
Had to put that one together. Okay. Very good. And Bree, I think, has something to add.
I do. As I was saying earlier, I do think that, you know, educating the public is uber important. But sometimes the public learns from the example that we set as blind people. And although we have the right to be the people that we want to be and to be the person that we want to be and do what we want to do, we all learn from everybody. We learn from the people around us, and sighted people learn from us as blind people around them. And the other thing that I wanted to say, too, is that when we were talking a little bit about learning from our other blind friends and from our other Federation family members and that kind of stuff, even people who have been leaders in our organization and who are, like, super experienced in those kind of things, they still ask questions, too. It is not a matter of rather you've been here for a minute or 50 years.
Very good. Yes. Yes. Friends, I am unfortunately looking at the time. We have about, 5 minutes at the most, because we want to give you time to get to the next group. So I would be willing to entertain another thought on this.
Mike?
I have another thought. Who is it?
Mike.
Mike?
I've got a thought if you want a good discussion to wind this up.
Good.
What is it you all would like to get out of the Federation that you haven't gotten yet?
What would you like to get out of the Federation that you haven't gotten yet? Marco, your hand's not up. She's usually first. I'm scared. Oh. That's tomorrow, Chris. We got plenty. But you know what? I'll tell you. Okay, Rachel. Yes. Yeah, you know why? Even if your voice wouldn't need it, we're recording so that we can put this up on our website. And so we ask you to wait for that mic so that the recorder will
pick
you
up. Okay, I got it.
Thanks.
I don't know if this is what you're trying to say. It's Rachel. I don't know if this is what you were referring to, but when I was signing up, I'm visually impaired, and my son is also visually impaired, and he actually attended the New Jersey Bell program, because that worked out for us, and they did it in New York, and Esther, my friend's daughter, attended there, and I said, you know, are there going to be kids from the Bell program? They said, well, there's going to be daycare. I said, what about, like, having a little extension of the Bell program at the convention? And they said, that's a good idea. Bring it up. So I'm bringing it up now. Like, you know what?
Yes.
Was I clear enough? Like, instead of just having daycare, you know, perhaps offering so that more parents with visually impaired kids would be willing possibly to come and bring their kids with them so that it's not just daycare. They're learning. They're going to be doing Braille and other skills.
So are you saying, if I can just interrupt you to ask, are you saying that not just an extension of the Bell program, but an extension, let's say, sometime on a weekend, a Sunday, say, which would include parent and child learning together?
That would be great. But I was talking specifically now when I was coming to the convention.
Oh,
I wasn't going to bring my son just to be babysat here. He's home now with his dad being babysat. But mm-hmm. if it would have been productive and there would have been real, like, you know, reinforcement of Braille or doing skills instead of just, you know, just a nanny, you know, taking care of him, I very likely would have brought him. And so I think Esther would have considered bringing her daughter as well. So if that can be a consideration of eventually,
Mike.
I think that would be great.
Yeah, I'd like this. Mike?
And throughout the year, that would be even better.
Mike?
At the same time, that would be an introduction to parents whose kids have not been through Bell yet.
Right.
Get a little taste of it before they send their kids.
Yep. Let's just convince them.
I like
to do
that.
It.
I like it. Let's write it down and see how we can implement it.
Thank you.
It a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, I hear you. I think it's a good idea. Esther's saying there should be a children's program as well as an adult program. We would have to find out how much interest there is, but that would be very worth doing. Okay. Friends, our next classes, let me just tell you. First, let me just say what a wonderful group you are and what a good discussion this has been.